Welcome back to another Sun City Shadow Hills podcast. This is a podcast for residents and prospective residents of our community. In case you missed my own story about living here, I spent my career working with retired people. I noticed that the people living at Sun City communities were significantly happier than those living elsewhere. That's why I decided to move here and why I'm so excited to tell the story. Studies have shown that people who volunteer or give back to their communities are happier and more engaged than people who don't. We have a jewel of a museum located about 10 minutes from here. It's called the Coachella Valley History Museum, and my guest today is its director, Patricia Korzek. Patricia, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
I'd like to start with talking a bit about you and your background. Where did you grow up and how did you get into this business? And
I grew up in a factory town in New England. And as a child, I decided I wanted to travel the world and do things that would be important. So I went on to college, worked in a factory to get myself through college so I understand what menial labor is like and minimum wage labor. But I worked really hard, went on, got a degree in art education, and then went on to get a master's in museum studies from JFK up in Orinda. My career basically was involved in the art. I managed some art galleries in San Francisco, and then as I went into the museum field, I used a lot of that knowledge to further myself and primarily became a specialist in working for organizations and museums that were either in danger of closing or places that wanted to grow. So I'm kind of a troubleshooter and a person that has the ability to make things get bigger and better. Prior to this, I was at Marchfield Air Museum for 10 years, and we grew that museum from a budget of $250,000 a year to over $1 million today. And we added a lot of new aircraft and really changed the face of that museum by becoming accredited with the American Alliance of Museums, expanding our everything about the museum. Prior to that, I was with the Riverside County Philharmonic, and I went there when they were in danger of closing, and we turned that around in 4 years. And before that, I worked in Dubai, and I helped the Arab government do the operations manual and do the hiring for their child city, which is the Children's Museum. Before that, other children's museums. So I have a history of about 25 to 30 years primarily working in all kinds of museums.
Mm-hmm. Well, so how did you find out about the Coachella Valley History Museum and why were you attracted to it?
Well, you know, I saw the advertisement and I didn't know very much about it, and I was looking after 10 years to make some changes. I was a little burnt out and took a drive up. And before I even applied, I wanted to see what it was like. And when I was so pleasantly surprised when I walked in, it is a jewel. It is a small, wonderful jewel that has so much potential. That's the kind of project I like. Mm-hmm. And I feel that I have the skill sets to take that from where it is now to the next level with increased memberships, more programming. Maybe there's a little empty lot on the end of the site to grow another portion of the museum. But I saw the tremendous potential, and I love the history of the area. And I'm always concerned about history being lost. Mm-hmm. So to me, it was a good fit for me, and I was so delighted when they offered me the job.
That's great. Now, I did a podcast last spring with Maureen Boren, who's one of the trustees. But for the audience members who might have missed that, why don't, in a nutshell, tell the history of the Coachella Valley as expressed in the museum.
Well, you know, it has a very rich history. Our museum was started in 1984 by the Coachella Valley Historical Society, who had been saving artifacts and things for many years in many locations. And they finally came together and said, look, we want to build a museum here. Our museum has several different factions to it. It has the Smiley Tyler House, which is an old, old house, which houses exhibits on the water, on the Kaweah Indians, a lot of things, an old kitchen from the 40s. So it gives you a little bit of a snapshot of life, early life here. And it also has an expanding exhibit. Every 2 years, there's a changeover, and next year we will be changing that exhibit in that exhibit hall. We also have the historic 1909 schoolhouse, which is a jewel. It was just named to the historic register in the county. We have just decked it out for the holidays in very traditional that era decorations, which are really lovely. So for those of you that go way back, I'm not that old, but I did go to a schoolhouse like that in New England when I was a child, mm-hmm. so they still do exist. But it's absolutely stunning. And then we have the only date museum in the United States. And by date, I mean date as in the dates that we eat, not that it's a site for you to find a partner. Just thought I would mention that. But the date museum traces the history of the date and how it came to the Coachella Valley from the Middle East to where it is today. And next to that, we have a date garden, which we actually do harvest the dates. They were just harvested a few weeks ago. So that's an active part of the museum. We also have the desert submarine, which most people don't even know what a desert submarine is.
Please tell us.
I think you all need to come and see that. It's pretty amazing. When the railroads were being built, it was really, as you know, hot out in the desert. And for the workers to be able to sleep at night, they built these one tiny little room, I want to call them shacks, out in the desert. They painted them very bright colors so people could find them. And it was sort of the first evaporative cooler. They had tin metal roofs, and they would spray them down with water to cool the inside so that the workers could sleep. It's a very simple concept that is pretty much the beginning of evaporative coolers today, but we have an original one. I'm still looking for more in the desert, but I think they're long gone. I think the properties that held them, that they deteriorated and they disappeared. But you can come to the museum and see where a couple of the railroad workers would have slept at night in the desert heat. So really fascinating. We have a water tower that was recently rehabilitated and placed into the center of our property from the Whittier Ranch. And within the next year, the city of Indio has purchased a projection system with the Arts Commission. And they're going to be actually in the evening projecting 3D images onto that water tower at night, which will be really kind of interesting. And they will all be images selected by the Arts Commission. Hmm. But we're very excited about that. And I think that'll make it a really nice a nice thing in the skyline for us to see at night.
That's great.
And that's just in a nutshell some of the parts of our property. I could go on and on and on, but I think that gives you...
You had told me previously that becoming accredited is an important thing for a museum. Mm-hmm. Would you discuss that a little bit?
Well, my hope here is to make this museum accredited. In the United States, there's over 20,000 museums of all different sizes. And out of that, only about, I think right now, 2,200 are accredited. And, of course, the big museums are, and some small ones. Accredited means you follow a really good standard of practices, of accounting, of doing things for the public. There's a whole criteria for this, to be selected to become accredited. It's about a 3 to 4 year process, lots of paperwork, lots of site visits. But what it does is it raises the standards of what you're doing so that when funders come through, they know that you're taking care of their money and you're putting it to the use that it was intended. So it helps in fundraising, it helps in your credibility, and it is a real feather in anyone's cap. I know at the Marchfield Air Museum, we were one of 11 air museums in the country that were accredited. Hmm. So it's for a select few, but when you have it, it's a badge of honor, and I hope to take our museum to that level in the next few years.
That's great. So I know that part of making the museum grow is to get more volunteers involved. We have a lot of potential volunteers here who are listening to the podcast. So could you describe some of the things that you'd like to see happen in the near future?
Well, I can't grow the museum without the volunteer corps growing, and I know that. Most museums cannot exist without volunteers. So for the future growth, I need to bring some fresh blood in there, and that's what I'm really looking for. People that have new ideas, people that aren't afraid of hard work. And I will say one thing. If anyone has physical limitations, they can still volunteer. There's not a reason in the world we can't take anyone as a volunteer. And we really enjoy having people of diversity and also people in wheelchairs, anyone, people. My former museum, we had a lot of people that wore hearing aids because they had been in the airline industry for a long time. So those kinds of things don't matter to us. Mm-hmm. What matters is a spirit inside of a person that wants to give and give of themselves. And I think you mentioned the fact that people here are happier. I've worked with a lot of older volunteers my whole life. And the average age of my volunteers, I think at my last museum, were probably in their 80s. But they were so vital and so full of life because they came to work every day and they were contributing. And I believe that is such an important thing. And we welcome that. Now, I have different areas and different things people can do. We have a lot of former school teachers that do our docent and school tours. So that is an opportunity. And that's kind of one that's very, very obvious. There's training involved in all of this. But another area that I need some help is in our archives. We have a lot of things that we need to put on the computer, that we need to do some more handling and cleaning and things like that. That doesn't require a skill set. It requires someone that wants to know more about history, because we train you how to handle the objects. You handle everything with gloves on. We would train you how to clean things and help us preserve them. And everything we have goes into archival boxes. And I will, as an aside, say, our museum has one of the best archives I have ever seen in this country. It is so well taken care of. And the people that founded the museum spent the money, bought the right materials to put everything in the proper containers so they will not be, they will not deteriorate. So I need people that have that curiosity, and that might be someone I could say, could you go online and see if you can find out more about this, or could you do this? Mm-hmm. So people that want to help me do research, work in the archives. When we're open to the public, we have four sites that have to be monitored. I need to have a docent or a person in each of those buildings during the day when our clients come in to be able to briefly talk about what's in there and basically keep an eye on them so they don't steal anything. I hate to say that, but when you go to the Getty, all those people hanging out there, they're all looking to make sure you're not stealing anything. But that is a job that could also be for a person that's not incredibly mobile. Mm-hmm. They could basically sit and answer questions and kind of be the host or hostess of that home and or whatever area it is. That is really, really vital, and that is important, and that's something I need to grow. That the training is very simple on that, and you can grow that position into something else. I also need people that can help me do mailings, people that would be greeters at special events. We have a big event coming up in February, our Arabian Nights dinner, that I would need people to help me with that. We have a lovely little museum store that we've made into a boutique, and it's doing quite well, and I need people to work in that. It's a tiny store, but we have very unique items. And so I need people that might be interested in retail. That can. It's a very simple computer system to help us make sales or help us, you know, even put things out on the shelves and dust and arrange. I do have a volunteer who is actually the head of the store right now. So that goes to show you how important the volunteers are for us. It's not a paid position. And one thing that I am in desperate need of are clever and creative people that can help me build things. I need an exhibit crew that can help me just make simple little cases, but that are clever and can help me put materials together. Right now I'm trying to put together a cart that will be taken outdoors during school tours, and it's a rolling cart, still mid-construction on that. But I need somebody that's handy with tools. You don't have to have been a carpenter in your lifetime. If you did some fiddling around in your garage and you like making things or fixing things or painting things, I have a lot of work for you. And that I'm very desperate in that area for any kind of, I don't want to call them handymen or handy women, but people that want to help me create. I'm a creative person. I can do a drawing. I just don't have the time to use the tools to build some of the things. And so that is another area that we really need. We have art classes, and we're going to start doing more art classes after the new year. And I will need people to help me with those, people to help monitor the classes, help us with the setup, and just be there to help out. So anyone that really enjoys the arts could help us in that way also. And I'm looking through my list here, and I think that's about it. I'm sure I can come up with more. I can also customize. I can make a job for anybody if they have a skill set that's important. But I know a lot of people that you have here are retired professionals. Mm-hmm. And I think we can use help in press mailings and things like that. We can use any skill set because the museum is a microcosm of the area. So we are open to a lot of new ideas, but I can't grow it without having more help. And I'm hoping we have a lot of warm bodies here.
That's great.
Jumping up right now and calling us.
Well, you certainly are enthusiastic about what's going on over there.
You know, I'm so enthusiastic, I have to tell you a funny story. I got lost coming here, and I went to the wrong clubhouse. And I walked in, and I saw a woman I hadn't seen in 5 years, and we had taught religious ed together in Riverside at St. Andrews. We both looked at each other and said, "What are you doing here?" Well, she had moved here to be with her fiancé, and I immediately pulled out my business card and said, "You need to come to the museum and volunteer." And she's going to. So be careful. When you get lost, you make the best of the moment that you can. And at first, I was delighted to see her after all these years. And second of all, I know she's a very enthusiastic person and a former school teacher. So she'll make a great volunteer.
Okay. Well, if people are interested, they should just contact you.
Yes.
They can go through the cult. You've got a website. And people can get a hold of you or they can get through me.
Okay.
I can put them in touch. Just to make it easy, why don't you give the audience the telephone number?
The phone number would be 760-342-6651. And you can also look at our website at cvhm.org. Like us on Facebook, and if you like us on Facebook, you'll see all the cool stuff we're doing right now.
Oh, that's great.
Another way people can become more familiar with the museum ahead of time is starting in January, the third Monday of each month, we're having a free lecture for the public, and it starts at 6 p.m., and it's a way to learn more about the Coachella Valley. These are all experts in their field. We have an interesting talk coming up about the way Coachella Valley came about. That's our first speaker, Pat Laughlin, who owned Laughlin Farms, Laughlin Date Farm with her husband. We have Dr. Priscilla Porter doing a talk with Diana Kitagawa about our agriculture here. I'm going to be giving a talk on Jackie Cochran, which is a person I know quite a bit about. And we also have another woman coming in to do a talk on the geology of the area and the fault lines. So these are free to the public, 6 p.m., not too late. Come on down and just in Medjool Auditorium and learn more about the area and maybe get a feel for the museum a little bit more.
Okay, and I didn't know who Jackie Cochran was before, and I suspect the audience doesn't either. So just give a short...
Oh, Jackie Cochran, first woman to break the sound barrier. Very famous pilot, achieved actually more honors than Amelia Earhart. And the airport here is named after Jackie Cochran, who lived here with her husband for many years on the Oldham Ranch. And we have a lot of her artifacts at the museum.
I hope we're able to get some volunteers, but at the very least, please go over and see this museum. There is just a wealth of interesting things there, going back from the Indian period through the railroads. The dates is quite a unique thing here, and it's time well spent. It's a great place to take your children or your grandchildren when they come out to visit you, and I think you'll find it a worthwhile afternoon. Well, Patricia, thank you for coming, and I hope that we're able to get you some volunteers.
I hope so, too.
So that wraps up another podcast. If you liked it, please subscribe and leave a comment. Also, look around the website for other podcasts that you might be interested in. If you have a friend who's thinking about moving here, have them subscribe and let me tell them how great it is to live here. Have a good new year and consider volunteering somewhere as one of your resolutions.